The Busy Marketer Podcast, Episode 6. Hi, I'm BJ Smith. I spent the last 17 years of my career working in online marketing. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with many great marketers who've learned to use their valuable resources efficiently to build amazing businesses using tools like social media, email, search engine marketing, landing page optimization, and more. Now I'm giving you access to those marketing rock stars right here on the Busy Marketer Podcast. My guest today is Blake Jameson. Welcome to the show, Blake.
Hey, thanks for having me, BJ.
Yeah, Blake started his online career back in 2009 as a content marketer for Zynga. He was grabbed up in 2012 by Pool Supply World and my friend from episode 4, Roy Steves. When I asked Roy who he'd recommend for the show, he didn't hesitate to say Blake. Quote, he's a genius when it comes to growing an audience. I believe it with over 88,000 fans on their Facebook page. In late 2012, Blake moved to LA to become a freelance consultant, working with many clients, including Pool Supply World. Apparently, that wasn't enough for Roy and his team because after the acquisition with Leslie's Pool Supply last October, Roy said, another quote, "We need Blake back." I don't have all the details, but it sounds like they drove out to the desert to meet with Blake and made him an offer he couldn't refuse. That may or may not have involved a sketchy van, hoods, and negotiating terms like sleep with the fishes. What I do know is Blake has been in Arizona since February, working full-time again with the gang at Pool Supply World. Among Blake's recent claims to fame is an experiment where he used creative marketing tactics to game the system on Tinder, netting him quite a few write-ups in publications such as Adweek, Business Insider, and Daily Dot. We'll dive into the story about that a little bit later. First, Blake, I'd like you to take a minute and tell us a bit more about yourself and how you got into this crazy world of social media and content marketing.
Sure. So basically, I went to UC Davis up in Northern California, near Sacramento. And after college, I moved back to the Bay Area where my parents are from and got a job at Zynga. And this was back when Zynga was certainly on the map, but they weren't. It was way pre-IPO. I think I was employee number 200. And now, to put it in context, I think they probably have 1,500 to 2,000. And yes. I got hired actually nothing to do with content marketing. I got hired to do basically just statistics and a little bit of A-B testing of ads. And randomly, my boss, the supervisor, I was on the iPhone mobile department. Our supervisor said, okay, we're coming out with this new game. We don't have a desktop kind of clientele we can tap into for users. Does anybody want to make a video demo explaining what the game is? And I was the only one to raise my hand, did so very quickly. And the video went really well. And it was kind of passed around the company and all of a sudden different departments. And kind of it was segmented by games. So like poker, for example, was their own kind of department. They came to me and said, hey, can we borrow you from your statistics job to do another video? And it just kept happening over and over. And so they decided that it made most sense to move me to the marketing department. And that was basically, that became my job. So I was doing kind of demo videos and commercial type videos, most of which were used on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, one of which actually aired on TV, which was awesome. But it was for the World Series of Poker teamed up with Zynga for the Zynga Poker game. So you could actually qualify for the World Series of Poker by playing Zynga Poker. And so we did this commercial spot.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was actually one of the most fun projects I've worked on. So basically at the time, I just was kind of riding the wave. And I'm like, this is awesome. I just get to go around and make these videos. And I didn't really realize that I was doing content marketing at all. I just thought I stumbled into an amazing job. And it was awesome. And it wasn't actually until much later, till I was working with Pool Supply World, that I realized, I was doing content marketing. I just wasn't on the marketing side. I was on the content creation and production side.
Right. You know, Roy takes a lot of credit for your skills.
I give him a lot of credit for my skills. So the feeling's mutual. Yeah, no, Roy's been a mentor. So, you know, like I said, at Zynga, it just kind of felt like this can't be real. I'm just goofing around. This can't be a, this job can't have longevity or whatever, this career. And then I got the job at Pool Supply World because I moved away from San Francisco up to Sacramento for reasons other than job. And yeah, so I got the Pool Supply World job primarily because I had Zynga on my resume. And at the time, that's when Zynga had recently gone public and they were still a huge buzzword in the tech industry. So when a pool supply company, you know, or any e-commerce company really says, okay, well, we want to start some social media or some Facebook. And then they get a guy rolling in that has Zynga on his resume. And I mean, this is Sacramento. So there's not like there's a tech scene. So that really, I think, put me ahead of the pack. And then I guess I must have interviewed well that day because they offered me the job. And so, you know, I kind of went to the CEO and said, okay, so what do you want to do? Do you want to do Facebook? Do you want to do Twitter? Do you want to do, you know, what's the plan? And he's like, I don't know. You're the social media guy. Figure it out. So it was a lot of kind of learning on the job. And I did a ton of reading. So that's kind of when I discovered John Loomer. And got into his stuff. And he's obviously very focused on Facebook. And I decided at the time Facebook's going to be kind of my thing. And so that's what I did. And we had the advantage of, in terms of competition for us, as a pool supply company, the competition on Facebook was non-existent. So it was not very long before we had the biggest pool supply company Facebook page. And then, you know, much like Roy, I'm a very competitive person. I don't look at us as competing as with pool supply companies. We're competing with e-commerce. So, you know, I was studying all of, you know, any other brands that I could find that were doing a good job. And, you know, it was kind of a mix of emulating and trial and error and trying things that, you know, I just hoped would work. And yeah, I mean, it's just worked out really well. And so, like you said, in late 2012, I'd worked at Pool Supply World for almost a year. I decided that I wanted to move to LA because I've always wanted to move to LA. And if I didn't do it then, I was never going to do it. And, you know, it was tough to walk away from such a sweet gig at Pool Supply World. I'm extremely grateful and lucky that they kept me on as a consultant so I could still have some touch with the brand, keep an eye on their Facebook. I trained another employee to kind of take over the day-to-day tasks. And then down in LA, it was great because there's such a big scene there, both with, you know, startups, and the tech scene is starting to pick up quite a bit, a lot of fashion and entertainment companies. So I was really able to get a lot of diversity in my portfolio. And yeah, and then one day out in the desert with hoodies and threats, yeah, they lured me back. And honestly, the day that I drove out to the desert, the whole drive out there to Palm Springs, I told myself, you know, this is, it's just a formality. Like I'm just doing this to humor them. There's no way I'm going to move to Arizona. I love Los Angeles. And meeting with Mark and Roy that day really reminded me how cool of a team and cool company culture they have there. And that was something that I had a little bit in LA, but it's not the same. Like there's nobody I've ever worked with that's like Roy and like the rest of the team at Pool Supply World. So it ended up being completely the opposite, you know, after I left, being like, well, there's no way that I'm staying in LA. Like, we're going to make this work. I'm going to join Pool Supply World again.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong right there. I mean, that speaks a lot to the culture of the company to, you know, get you from the place that you've wanted to live for, you know, God knows how long.
Right.
And I know a little something else about you, that you are a surfer.
Yes.
How does a surfer survive in the desert?
So, you know, I started surfing in high school, grew up just north of San Francisco. And when I left for college, obviously up in Davis, Sacramento, there's no ocean. And I survived just fine. And then I moved to LA and I kind of rediscovered surfing. And for the year that I lived in LA, you know, out of 365 days, I probably surfed 200 of them. As soon as I got back in the water, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. It was like, it was my clarity at the beginning of the day. I couldn't focus if I didn't go surfing in the morning, or if I have a stressful day, I go surfing in the evening and it all is gone. It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
So
no, I understand. I, I'm a runner, and you know, I get out on a trail somewhere in the woods, and you know, nothing around but you know, some deer.
Yep.
Maybe wild turkey or two, and yeah, it totally clears your mind. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for you, I guess you could theoretically run everywhere. Although,
yeah,
Arizona summers I think would be brutal. But yeah, so obviously the surfing is really what I miss the most about LA, and so. You know, I've kind of negotiated with Roy and the rest of the team to say, hey, look, every once in a while, I'm going to have to go back and spend a long weekend surfing there. And that's not a problem. So they're super understanding about that kind of thing. And, you know, I've been in Arizona for almost 3 months now. And I've only been back a couple times. Every time I go back to LA, I surf, which is awesome. And now I appreciate it even more. But yeah, I'm going on hikes and also just staying wildly busy with Pool Supply World because it's pool season now, and this is,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's game time.
I hear that. Yeah. You know, on your website, you've got some info about a book you're working on. So I'm assuming it's fair game. Can we talk about it?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So the book is called Social Hustle Surf, and it's, partially, it's basically one third social media strategy and kind of theory, and one third lifestyle design, kind of circa Tim Ferriss stuff,
right.
And one third surfing adventures and just stories. And basically the way that I tie it all together is I kind of go over each chapter is broken down into those three sections. So it starts with the social section, and it talks about the different social networks and content theory. I try not to get too specific because things change so quickly. But,
yes,
you know, with the different networks, what kind of content is native to that platform? What's done the best in my experience or based on, you know, studies and whatnot? And then moving on to the lifestyle design kind of hustle section, I basically go over the social media stuff and how I've actually implemented it in my kind of career transformation. So that part is almost entirely autobiographical that also talks about the social media stuff. And then in the surfing adventures, just like it sounds, I kind of tell different stories about surfing and experiences that I've had and kind of relate it back to social media. So like the best example I can think of off the top of my head is, you know, you walk down to the beach, you're about to get in the water, and you're going to see usually a clump of surfers all in one little area where the waves are breaking consistently and often and biggest. And then you'll see those outliers, you know, 100 yards down the beach each direction, where it might be one guy or two guys or just, you know, they're kind of scattered. And, you know, I look at that kind of like social media where, you know, you just want to jump into social media marketing. You could look, okay, everyone's on Facebook. That's where it's going on. Everybody's having success. There's, you know, the waves are huge, whatever. But then there's those people, you know, that are like the first person to get on Vine or, in my example, the first person to get on Tinder and market themselves. So, you know, the waves don't come as frequently. They might not be as big, but like when they come, you don't have to deal with the politics of the other surfers or surfing etiquette or anything like that. It's like the wave is all yours. So it's easier to stand out or to catch a wave or whatever if you're where everyone else isn't. So that's just kind of an example. So, you know, I'd go through something like that and also talk about a story about, you know, maybe myself where I went out and I surfed and I decided not to go where everyone was. I went down the beach a little. I had the best wave of my life, you know, or whatever.
Right on, yeah.
You know, and then it kind of comes full circle back to social, rinse and repeat. So, but yeah, it's cool. It's I've been working on it for probably 8 months, and it basically tells the story, the hustle, the autobiographical part is like from me leaving my bartending job, which I had right before Pool Supply World, because when I moved to Sacramento, I couldn't find a tech job right away. So it went from me being a bartender to getting into content marketing, and basically takes me all the way through living in LA to right before when I move to Arizona.
Nice. That's cool, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait till it comes out.
Yeah, right on.
I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for it, and we'll have you back on like we discussed earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great.
Definitely. All right. So you brought up Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What in the world did you do on a dating app to get a write up in Adweek's website?
Sure. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. So I'm really not much of like an online dating guy. It's just really never been my thing. I have no problem talking to people. I'll go out and just meet people. And that's how I like to do any kind of dating. When I moved to LA, a really good friend of mine named Nick said, hey, you know, there's this app. It's called Tinder. You should check it out. It's a dating app. You'll meet a bunch of people because you're new to town. And I said, nah, you know, I'm just going to go out and, you know, I'll just check out the bars and whatever. I'll just go meet people. He's all right, all right. And he kept kind of pestering me about it. And one day he came to me and said, hey, you know that Tinder app I told you about? I said, yeah. He said, well, I saw an advertisement on it and it was for a TV show. I'm like, all right, you got my attention. I'm downloading it right now. So I downloaded it, and Tinder actually partnered with a few different TV shows. I think New Girl, a TV show called Suits, which I ended up getting entirely addicted to because of Tinder. And they kind of used it in a sneaky way. I thought it was actually just a marketer being sneaky. At the time, I saw the one of the co-founders of Tinder speak. It was actually a Tinder-endorsed thing. That's how they made some money, which is good for them. But it was like few and far between. Like, I think they worked with maybe three TV shows. And that's only in the LA area, not all over. So what I did was I took my profile picture and I got a font that looked very similar to the Tinder kind of branded font. And I wrote match of the day. And I ended up layering it on top of my photo. And then on each, because you can have up to five photos. And basically, for anyone that doesn't know how it works, you open up the app and you can basically say, I want to meet girls between, you know, the age of 25 and 30 within a 5 mile radius or 10 or 20 or whatever. They'll be shown a picture of a girl. And you, or, you know, if you're a girl, show a picture of a guy or whatever. And you can either click like or don't like. If you click like, and they also click like on your picture, then it just gives you guys each a notification. It says, hey, you guys both like each other. You should talk. And then it's a simple messaging, like text almost.
Easy.
Yeah. Super, super simple. So it's kind of like geo-targeted hot or not, which,
right, yeah.
You know, which is genius. So I modified my picture to make it look as if I was endorsed by Tinder and some type of new feature where Tinder was recommending me to girls saying, hey, this is your match of the day. You know, he's perfect for you or whatever. And yeah, so I did that. And then the way that it works is, you know, if I click like or swipe to the right, depending on how you're using the app, if I click like on somebody, the next time they open the app, I'm going to be filtered right near the top of their app, you know, right near the top of their selections, because Tinder wants you to like log on and immediately, as soon as you click like on somebody, like they want you to get a match so that you're like, oh man,
connect right away.
Right. So this is when I was new to Arizona, not a lot of people had swiped me. So I kind of got to go through all of the girls within, I ended up going up to 100 mile radius, but I swiped every single one of them just like. And thousands for sure. And then just kind of waited for like a week. And over the week, I started getting in, you know, as soon as those girls started to open up their app, I was right at the front. It said match of the day. And so I just started getting a ton of matches. And not only that, I mean, people were messaging me. Some were saying, you know, haha, nice try. You almost got me. Some were legitimately wondering like, wow, this is a new feature. I've never seen this. And that's pretty much it. And I wrote a Medium article kind of about my week-long experiment saying, you know, this is exactly what I did. I gave away my Photoshop file to, you know, just a free download if somebody else wants to try it. Told them the exact steps I took, every single bit of data of like, this is how many matches I got. This is, you know, this was my radius. This was my everything. Here's how to do this. And yeah, it just took off. And it's still like, even to this day, like just yesterday, and it's been 2 months. Tomorrow, it'll have been 2 months since the original article was published. Yesterday, a good friend of mine sent me a screenshot from her app of another dude in, like, I think San Diego that had taken my template and used it and just done the exact same thing. And she's like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious. Like, I know that you invented this and people down here in San Diego are using it. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of silly. I mean, I love to write. You know, writing my book has been an awesome adventure. I write about surfing on Medium. I write about all kinds of stuff. And this Tinder, you know, I took it seriously. I did all the data and did my due diligence, but it certainly wasn't me thinking this is what's going to like put me on the map. This is what's going to get me an ad week. And it was just kind of a random Sunday thing. And then that happened. So it was kind of cool.
That's very cool. Yeah, yeah, actually, I looked up a couple of the articles. As a matter of fact, I was Googling your name, and in the
it's dangerous.
The instant results. Yeah, as I finished writing your last name and I put a space back there, it immediately put Tinder behind your name.
Oh, that's hilarious. I didn't know that at all. But I mean, yeah. I guess it makes sense. I mean, to put it in perspective, you know, I really like writing on Medium. I used to write on my own blog a lot, and I've gotten into Medium because it's just, it casts such a wide net. It's got a lot of readers, owned by Twitter, super clean. And I wrote these couple surfing articles and I thought they just did amazing. I mean, I got one of them, I got 1,000 views in 24 or 48 hours, you know, and then in a week it was up to 2,000 or 3,000. And that's the kind of traffic that my blog at that time was not getting at all. And so, and even to this day, I mean, those two articles have maybe 3,000 and 4,000 views each. I thought those were insanely successful. And the Medium article on Tinder is like at 30,000. It's like 10x. It's insane. So
that's crazy.
It was an accident.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, let's get into some of the core questions.
Yeah.
Start us off by talking about your philosophy. So what is your mantra when it comes to the way you run your online marketing?
Sure. It goes beyond online marketing for me, and it's actually something that I have tattooed on my wrist, and it's just a simple formula that says love is greater than money. And to me, that doesn't just mean like romantic love. It just means like your passion and whatever makes you happy. And I think that in marketing, it's so much easier to market something that you truly, truly believe in. And I've marketed and, you know, been in sales jobs where I sell things that I love and endorse and use. And I've been in sales and marketing jobs doing things that I'm like, this is to pay the bills. I wouldn't do this. You know, I wouldn't use this product. And it's so night and day as far as the actual outcomes that you get, that it's just not worth your time doing something for a company or a product or a brand or whatever that you don't believe in. So I think that, you know, and I'm guilty of it too. I've taken social media jobs just to make sure that my rent's paid or I can buy my next surfboard. But, you know, being back at Pool Supply World has really helped me remind me that it's really about like being passionate and not necessarily that I'm super passionate about chlorine. But I'm
that's a nice visual. Yeah, okay.
You know, I am super passionate about the people that I work with and the projects that I get to work on because I have so much creative control and so many smart people around me that, and you know, in our industry, I truly believe that we offer, you know, the best customer service and the best price and the best value and all that stuff, which whatever, everyone's going to say that about their company, but it's what I believe to the core, and that just makes it so much easier to do online marketing for the company.
Yeah, and that seems to run through the company. You know, talking with Roy and I can't remember the other guy I met in an event a couple of years ago that was working with him.
Uh-huh.
But all you guys really do feel passionately about the company. So that's, you know, that's great. I can definitely relate to what you're talking about. Love is greater than money. I actually had a thing this week, and it's not necessarily marketing related, but there was an event held at the local university. A group of investors was coming to say, all right, if you want investors to, you know, give you money in your company, these are the steps that you need to do. This is how your company needs to be structured, you know, all that kind of fun stuff.
Right.
I wasn't necessarily looking for an investor, but curious more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And these guys come out there and not knocking what they do. I mean, they have a purpose. Obviously, they wouldn't be giving you money unless they're expecting to make money. And everyone, they're saying that we expect you to exit within 5 years. So we're going to let you build up this company. We'll give you money. You'll build up this company. It'll grow nice and big. And then you got to sell it.
Right. Right.
And you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I love what I do. And, it, you know, as much as I'd love to take a company and, you know, sell it in 5 years and retire, you know, I feel like how close can you be You know, right. you gotta have that passion.
Right.
I don't know. I just can't at this point in the game, I can't imagine turning around and selling in 5 years, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that if you look at like the companies that VCs are investing into, especially in like the tech space, it's like, that is the kind of cookie cutter thing. It's like, that's the plan. But you know, those aren't, I just don't think those are lifelong passion businesses.
No, you know? Right. Exactly.
And the people that are running lifelong passion businesses are certainly not looking for VC usually.
Right. Yeah.
Cause you got to control your vision. And as soon as you get somebody that's a stakeholder in your company, then it's like, well, now I have to share and run my vision and my dreams by somebody else.
Yeah. And that was the other thing they said, you pretty much count on, you'll probably have to step down as CEO at some point.
Right.
You know, because you'll get in, it makes sense. You know, again, for some of these large companies, if I start out a small tech company, and it grows to, you know, $100 million company, there's going to be a certain point where my skill set runs out.
Right.
You know, I may be a good marketer, but we're talking about managing big money. So, you know, I can understand it to that point. But again,
right.
Stepping aside from your passion is kind of tough. So, yeah, I like that. That's a really cool mantra, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, right on.
Blake, I'm a big believer in learning from past mistakes. Every success is the result from lessons learned from trial and error. So here's the fun question.
Uh-huh.
Tell us the story behind one of your greatest failures, and then tell us what you learned from it.
Sure. Okay. So, and it's funny, actually, I updated my Facebook status earlier today, and it said the most important thing to do is fail forwards. The rest is just going to shake itself out. And I think that's entirely true. So my failures, it's a little bit broad. So it was kind of in my mentality rather than like one specific, like, oh, shoot, I can pinpoint that I did wrong. When I moved to Los Angeles and started, basically my goal in Los Angeles was I want to get as much experience as I can and as diverse of a portfolio as I can and make enough money so that I can surf when I want to. So I joined a PR company, excellent company, awesome people, still very closely in contact with them. They didn't have social media. They only did traditional digital PR. And so I kind of came on to start and run their social media division. And it's a little bit different world because, you know, working with Pool Supply World for a year, and that was it for my social experience, it was just consistent. You know, I knew every month I got a paycheck and I knew what I had to do and I had my goals. It was a very long life cycle for that client. Coming into the PR world and especially working with a lot of startups are, you know, we'd have, you know, maybe anywhere from like 1 to 3 month minimum contracts. And then every time it kind of cycled and had to renew. So basically what ended up happening is we just had a lot of clients cycling through and I ended up spending a lot of my time on business development in conjunction with trying to run social media strategy and execution for the clients we had. And I kind of lost focus of the kind of like I mentioned, you know, you got to love what you do and you got to sell products right. You like. I kind of got stuck in this washing machine of clients in, clients out, almost cookie cutter social media crap. And I don't want to say that my work was crap, but really looking back, it's like, oh man, I could have done so much more if I had just been focused on the clients that I was passionate about or just fewer clients in general or whatever. So I kind of, my biggest mistake there, I guess, was getting too deep into that, but you know, the business development and just trying to cycle and just always closing and getting more clients and networking, just always getting clients. Then it's like every time I'm starting them off and I'm trying to get their, you know, their brand voice going and executing some strategy on a couple different platforms. And then all of a sudden they're gone and I have to start over with somebody else. So yeah, I got kind of bogged down with too many clients and not enough focus. For my mission of getting more, you know, on my portfolio. Sure. That's great. But did I really like execute any projects? Well, not any, did I execute as many projects as I could have to my fullest potential? Definitely not, because I was distracted.
I started my career out in the late 90s as a web designer. I built hundreds of websites over the years through various agencies. In the early years, they were one and done low budget sites. And once your budget was maxed out, you typically wouldn't deal with them again. There are so many of them out there that I wish I had more time to nurture and see them really reach their full potential. But we couldn't do that with this get them in, get them out type of business model. It was certainly not fulfilling, which is why I decided that I didn't want to do that type of work anymore.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, luckily, because I got to start my own division, I mean, near kind of the end of my time in LA, the business was shifting that way where, you know, I had a very good relationship with the founder of the firm. And, you know, we basically sat down, decided, you know, what was best for the company was just sometimes to take less clients and just do a better job. And if that meant that I made less money one month, I didn't care. And so that was the direction we were going, and they have continued to go, and they're crushing it right now. But yeah, Pool Supply World was just, it was too good to be, couldn't pass it
up. Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I can understand, you know, and again, like you said, the culture is there. You pretty much do what you want to do because they trust you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, today was ridiculous. Today I got, you know, me and a couple of the other content creators, we made a Vine with Play-Doh. Well, a couple of Vines. I got to do this Photoshop thing for draft day for, I did a mock-up of the NFL draft where it's Johnny Manziel holding up a Pool Supply World football jersey saying, you know, we're his first pick for pool supplies or whatever. And like the stuff I get to work on, it's still like back to the Zynga days. It's like, this is a fantasy land.
Yeah. All right. Who was responsible for the stormtrooper on May the 4th?
Oh, that was me as well.
Yeah. I saw that. I'm like, yeah, there we go.
Yeah. I recently hired kind of a content assistant who she's a student at ASU, and she's so good at every single day there's always something. I mean, there's always stuff trending, but like, you know, there's like National Wiener Dog Day, which I obviously wouldn't know what it is, but she'll come to work to be like, no, it's Wiener Dog Day. We need to do a wiener dog in a pool. I already got the picture, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is exactly why I hired you. This is awesome.
So, nice. Yeah. I love it. All right. Let's talk a little bit about efficiency.
All sure. Right?
Busy marketers are swamped with tasks because our world is always changing and there's new opportunities around every corner, new channels, technologies, bright, shiny objects, mm-hmm. you know, everywhere we turn.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be smart with the decisions we make and be efficient so that our core stuff doesn't suffer.
Right.
I want you to share a time where you made changes to become more efficient. Tell us a story and what steps you took.
Sure. So, I guess, I mean, the most recent one is a Pool Supply World. So I am director of content marketing and I will run anything that's related to content, social media, or our blog. And there's so many channels. I mean, it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Vine, Google+, House, Yelp. There's a pool forum called Trouble Free Pool, and then our own blog. It's extremely overwhelming if you try and look at everything, you know, like that. Oh, and Tumblr. The list just it's super long. It's like 16 channels or something that I manage. Yeah. You know, and that's just too many things to check. Even with just one client, Pool Supply World is the only client I work with. I just can't do it. I can't balance the content creation and talking to the customers. So I think that especially relating to social media, depending on your niche or where you decide you want to focus, I mean, really pick like your top five. And then even from there, like pick your top one and maybe kind of one or two secondary channels. So that's what I did back when I didn't know any better. I didn't know anything when I started with Pool Supply World. I'm like, all right, well, Facebook's my thing. I'm just going to do a little bit of Twitter here and there. And then a little bit of this pool forum that I mentioned. That's kind of it. Like I didn't try to do Instagram and Tumblr and Vine and Snap. We even have a Snapchat and we're good at it because it's that ASU girl.
Ah, nice.
With so many channels that I'd set up with over the last 2 years of working with Pool Supply World in-house and as a consultant, you know, it had been so fragmented. So when I came back and joined full-time, came to Arizona, really like kind of the first thing on my plate was, okay, let's write down every single channel that we're working on now let's prioritize, you know, what are our top five? What are our top three? What's our top one? And one of my major shifts was, okay, our top one is the blog because we own that. Facebook is always changing. Who knows if either another network is going to take over or they're going to change their algorithms for the 100th time. So
building your house on rented land.
Yes, 100%. And so it was really, me kind of narrowing my focus, and that helped me be more efficient in that I didn't have to spend so much time trying to jump from platform to platform and really kind of shift mindsets and say, okay, now this is the way I need to talk to people. Oh, it's Twitter. Oh, I'm limited to this many characters. Oh, it's Facebook. I need to make sure that the images are on point. Even though both of those still ended up in the mix. It just became more efficient because I got more focused. And then when we wanted to scale, i.e. for pool season right now, you know, that's when we hired several other people for our content team and said, okay, so everybody has ownership of, you know, you own these channels, be the master of these channels. I've got my channels, Taylor's got her channels, you know, Kevin's got his. It's awesome because we can all be efficient because we don't all have to try and monitor everything. We just are laser focused on this is what we need to be really good at. We can be the best at it.
And you guys have to tailor your content for each channel too, yeah?
100%. That's extremely important to be, you know, to really kind of stand out and do, you know, the things that we want to do. There's plenty of brands that send the same message to every single channel. I've been guilty of it before, but
I did it today.
Yeah, no, I mean, it depends. But in general, you know, if I'm trying to compete with huge enterprise brands, because really I am like Gary Vaynerchuk, who I think you touched on with Roy. He's one of my heroes. He's got VaynerMedia. They do tons of enterprise social media clients. You know, they're running, Pepsi or Nestle and, you know, Nilla Wafers or whatever, Mountain Dew, those big dogs. Like I look at their social media stuff and nothing, you know, if they have a Facebook post, there's no way that that's on Twitter. Twitter's completely different. So because it's native to Twitter. So I'm trying to take after Gary or give VaynerMedia a run for their money with a much smaller team at Pool Support.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, and that's tough.
Well, it comes down to efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole point, right? Yeah, yep. Sweet. All right. Well, to let you know, man, I get you and my other guests to tell these stories for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. One is to give our listeners ideas and stir their creative juices. And the other is to let them know that they're not alone out there. Consider this part of our group therapy session because, you know, we all get bogged down and have to make changes and we all make mistakes. And, you know, even audience growing geniuses like you, Blake, aren't perfect. But
that was Roy's words, not mine.
Yeah, there you go. Those really were Roy's words.
That's flattering.
I thought about digging up, that was part of the recording that, that was before I said go, you know?
right. Yeah, no, I re-listened to Roy's, just yesterday too. So.
No, you did?
Yeah.
Nice.
Good show.
What I want to get into now is, let's talk about stories of success. You know, we've talked about getting efficiency and we've talked about learning from mistakes, but now I want to get into success, you know, a decision that you made, a campaign you launched, something that had the most impact on you personally. It doesn't have to be the most financially rewarding. I just want, you know, your favorite story.
Sure. My favorite story, and it's the same one that I told at the All Facebook conference when I spoke there. Shoot, I guess that was the end of 2012. So it's been a while now. So it's an old story, but it's still by far my favorite. And it really goes back to, like, you know, Pool Supply World is not a sexy brand. Like the truth is, like, we sell chlorine. We sell machines that people build specific enclosures to hide because it's pool equipment. It's just not the kind of thing that somebody thinks, oh, I'm going to go on Facebook and that's going to be cool. So basically, when I first started, I decided Facebook is going to be my thing. I thought with Pool Supply World, the best way that I could kind of connect with our customers or connect with fans on social media was going to be, I'm going to learn as much as I can about pool equipment. I am going to be the master of pool chemistry, of pumps, filters, anything you want to know, I got it. And then I'm going to be super informative on Facebook, and I'm going to tell you everything you need to know about your, you know, chlorine levels or your pH or cyanuric acid or whatever it is. And so that's what I tried to do, and it just fell on its face. It was terrible. I learned a lot, which is great. Nobody liked or commented or shared or became a fan. People just don't care. People were on Facebook to get away from all anything that made them think. And so on Valentine's Day of 2012, I said, all right, I found this picture of a pool that was in the shape of a heart, and I posted it on our Facebook wall. And at the time, you know, we probably had 50 fans, and it got 35 likes within an hour. And algorithms have changed. Everybody doesn't see your stuff anymore, whatever. At the time, that was a huge deal. To get, yeah, you know, to capture so many of our fans that actually click like, to me, that was like, oh my gosh, I cracked the code. People just want to see cool shaped pools. So then I, you know, the next day I found a pool that that was shaped like a Les Gibson guitar or a Les Paul guitar. Sorry. And just crushed it. Like 40 out of 50 people liked it. and all of a sudden, you know, I ended up running out of like ridiculous shapes. Even though there were quite a few of them. And I just started posting pool pictures from just extravagant resorts all over the world. And so this one's in, you know, at the Ubud Hanging Gardens in Bali, or this one's at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore, both of which are amazing pools, by the way. And people just loved it. And what I realized is, you know, people are on social media to get an escape. They're sneaking away from their, you know, Microsoft Outlook at work so that they can check in with their friends. They can see a few memes. They can read a BuzzFeed article, whatever. It's not that serious. So as soon as I kind of accepted that, like, people just want to laugh or smile or dream on Facebook or on any social media for that matter, things just got so much easier. And that's really, like, you know, the reason that we got – that we're now at almost 90,000 Facebook fans is, well, A, partially because we do advertise.
Right.
But everything that I post is specifically designed to be like extremely shareable. And it doesn't matter if they know, like, if they're seeing my, you know, the name Pool Supply World next to an awesome freaking pool, it doesn't matter that I'm not selling them a pump that day or trying to peddle chlorine. It just matters that, like, they're thinking about, oh yeah, my swimming pool is in the backyard. And then, you know, when it does come time to open the pool and buy some chlorine, you know, they've seen our picture of our brand name over and over and over again next to things that they like. So the association is there. And then, you know, long term, it's an endurance race. They come back and they buy from us, which is awesome. So, I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's really like native content. And as far as content marketing, then that was kind of my win of realizing, oh, trying to give this super informational stuff over a platform that's image driven at the time, like, just doesn't work. It's not native. People don't want to see that. So,
yeah, that's right on, man. I had a similar experience with outdoor decor. Show a studio shot and everybody ignores it. Take that same item and drop it in a beautiful location and people go nuts over it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that was a big lesson for me. And I think it should be for any, especially in the companies that are like the most, that think they're the most boring. You know, you have such an opportunity to stand out if you make content that's actually engaging compared to everyone else in your niche that's just doing really boring, you know, studio photos.
Yeah. Speaking of engaging, I played your video game the other day.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the Poolaga.
Poolaga.
Yeah. Which was an ode to Galaga from...
Yeah. That was hard, man.
Yeah, I can see. It's challenging, yeah.
I think I saw on the demo or the screenshots of it, and it was like sharing with your friends, and it had... like I just scored 600 and something on, you know, Poolaga.
Yeah.
And I was like, I played it like 3 times and I think I had a score of 6.
Oh man. It's really hard.
But I think it's like, it could be like one of those, Flappy Bird type things, man, you know, where it's so hard to do that you have to beat it. You have to keep doing it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
But now I saw that cracked me up. That's fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect example. You know, like I said, like my day today was just ridiculously fun. Is that particular game was actually created by my kind of protege that I had groomed when I left to go to LA, who's since moved on. I think he's working at Apple now. But smart kid, and used, I don't know, some kind of platform where it made it, you didn't have to know all the coding. And we just, you know, decided one day, like, hey, you know what? We haven't tried this, and the competition definitely hasn't tried this. So let's make our own video game where you go around, you know, you swim around the pool as a chlorine bucket and you shoot algae like this. It just doesn't happen.
Chlorine tabs shooting out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that it doesn't happen. So it just goes to show like how cool Pool Supply World is in terms of giving us creative control.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. Well, thanks for sharing those stories, my friend. Yep. Busy marketers out there are taking it all in. I know it.
Yep.
So let's have a little more fun. It's time for our five questions.
Okay.
All right. These are short answer questions, but feel free to elaborate on any of them as you see the need. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So what new advances in online marketing are you most excited about today?
New advances in online marketing. That's a good question. So, okay. So
what's got you hyped up right now?
No, I'm going to go with Tinder. Like the opportunities, because things like Tinder come up and now all of a sudden Tinder has a huge user base, but no marketers. And because technology is just getting better and better, faster and faster, it doesn't have to be a dating app. Like there's so many things like that that are coming out that gain traction, and there's nobody advertising. That's exciting.
Yeah, there you go. All right. If you could choose one conference like a social media marketing world that you would recommend to any online marketer, what would it be?
Oh, it's a tough one. Okay. So I know that Roy, I got to kind of side with Roy on this. I don't think that it's about the conference. I think that it's about just getting out there, because it's not about like the speaker, the keynote. You're going to be able to watch that on YouTube anyways, and probably you're going to be able to live stream it. So I wouldn't worry so much about who's speaking at the conference, but if you go to a conference, just network with people. And just talk to people. And so, you know, in that sense, going to smaller ones is a little bit less intimidating, a little bit easier, and a little bit cheaper. Anybody at any of those kind of conferences they're investing in themselves to be a better online marketer. So those are the people that you want to talk to, because you are going to meet those kind of diamonds in the rough that are like, holy crap, you know, it could be a vendor or a business partner or whatever it is. But I don't think that the conference is important. I think it's your mindset going in and understanding that it's the people you meet are the other attendees. It's not the speakers.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. You know, Emily said it as well, in our last episode. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's those people that you meet and those relationships that you form, and they become, sounding boards, advisors, you know, people who are going through.
That's where I met John Loomer, actually, at the Facebook marketing conference. And, you know, at the time, he was like my idol. And we ended up speaking on the same panel and then became super good friends. And now I'll, you know, be on his podcast sometimes. And he's a smart dude. Very smart.
He seems like a fun guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
If you could choose only three social media platforms for your business, which would you choose? We kind of talked about this a little bit.
Three social media platforms. Okay, so it's going to depend on my business, because we've grown so big on Facebook that I have to include Facebook. Twitter is an absolutely awesome listening tool. Love Twitter. And I'm kind of torn because... So normally if somebody didn't have any social media, I would say my top one would say go for Google+, because the SEO benefits and the, you know, the author ranking and page ranking stuff is huge. But unfortunately in this list for Pool Supply World, I think that going Facebook, Twitter, Google+ is like too cliche. So I'm going to go Facebook, Twitter, Vine, because it's just new and it's fun and exciting. And again, there's an opportunity to stand out because there's not that many marketers there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing a little research for an episode earlier and I was looking at the numbers and I was surprised to see that, Pinterest had a higher user base among American adults than Twitter.
Yeah. Pinterest is good. I mean, it's all about the demo. You know, if you're looking for the, it's primarily female, a lot of stay at home moms, but yeah. That's a huge, huge demographic for a lot of businesses. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned Google Plus in there, you know, that's one that always, I don't want to say it surprises me. Maybe it does surprise me because, you know, I was in on the ground floor. I was one of the beta testers. I was drinking the Google Kool-Aid back in the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, this is so much better than Facebook. People are going to mass exodus. Obviously that never happened, but you know, with Google incorporating, you know, it does have a very good user base. I have to admit that I don't give it as much attention as I should, but when I'm doing posts and I put something out on Google Plus, I'm usually, I don't have a lot of followers on there, but I'm getting a lot of interaction.
Yep.
Because the hashtags work so well and the search features, of course, it's Google, but the search works so well.
Yeah. No, I mean, it does. We have 90,000 Facebook fans and we have 1,000 Google Plus followers. And if I post the same picture on Google Plus and Facebook, we get almost the same level of engagement on each. That can't be ignored.
Yeah, not at all. All right. So what is your favorite time-saving tool that you wouldn't want to live without?
Okay. It's a two-part tool. It is a combination of Google Calendar and a whiteboard. I know we were tweeting about the whiteboard wall. So Basically I have this ritual, which I can't imagine living life before it, even though I did for a long time, is every Sunday night, I wipe my whiteboard completely clean and I load up my week on Google Calendar and I write on my whiteboard everything that I need to do that I can think of, everything from I need to write a thank you card to my mom to, you know, I need to produce this, you know, blog content for Pool Supply World, every single thing that I can think of just on my whiteboard. And then I go through my Google Calendar and I plot it all on there. And, you know, what I like to do is actually kind of plan my fun time first. And I'll say, okay, you know, Tuesday night, I'm going to write or I'm going to paint, do some art or whatever. And then I just start putting it all in and just blocking out. And of course, as I go through my week, you know, I don't always, you know, it's not like from 9:30 to 10:30, I'm writing the blog article, even though I said I was going to be like, it's fluid. But just getting it all laid out there and looking at my week, you know, it's really less, it's funny contrasting seeing it, the same content on Google Calendar and then on my whiteboard. Because I look at it on my whiteboard and I'm like, this looks so intimidating. This list is so big. I had to start writing tiny at the bottom just to fit everything on. But then it's like I look into Google Calendar and I'm like, okay, cool. So I got it all blocked out. I've still got some free time. Which usually ends up getting used up because things take longer than you think, but it's just kind of my routine and it's extremely helpful for, you know, plotting out how I'm going to spend my days and making sure I get everything I need to done.
Do you still have the giant whiteboard?
I don't.
I was wondering if that made the move.
No, it's, if you look at my Instagram, I think I have a picture of it in my alley with a sad face. It was so big. It was 6 feet tall by 12 feet wide and it covered an entire wall in my room. Wow. It was epic. But yeah,
I love those things.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So next is our last question. So what is one book you would recommend every busy marketer read?
This is where normally I would say a Gary Vaynerchuk book. I think those are fantastic. But lately I read Made to Stick by Dan and Chip Heath, and it was amazing. I'll just leave it at that. It was really good.
I'm not familiar with that one. So tell us a little bit about it.
So Made to Stick. So it basically talks about why certain ideas kind of take hold so so well. Kind of like how things go viral before viral was a thing. It's like, why do some ideas stick so much and why do some not? So it comes to, you know, tapping into what really drives people and just using the language that people can relate to or makes them want to remember or makes them want to share. It's universal. It's amazing.
Cool. Well, I will put a link to the book in the show notes so everybody will be able to get in there and check it out.
Perfect.
I don't have to put a link to Google Calendar in there, I don't think.
Probably not.
Well, Blake, man, I appreciate your time today. Tell us some of the ways that we can connect with you online.
Yeah, pretty much anywhere. My username is just Blake Jameson. So Facebook/Blake Jameson, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, whatever you want. And Jameson spelled a little bit unique, Jameison. But yeah, shoot, you can find me on Tinder.
Just keep swiping, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Blake, man, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, man.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody, give it up for Blake Jameson. Another fun interview. We talked a little about Blake's book, Social Hustle Surf, which is with the editor now. Blake will be back on when the book comes out, and we'll give away a couple of signed copies, so be on the lookout for that. Now it's time for our next segment, Listeners' Questions. Today's question comes from Lindsay, who writes, in episode 5, you and Emily Pfeiffer talked about the apps Hootsuite and Buffer. Emily specifically mentioned not using a shotgun blast approach. Can you elaborate on this a little more? Thanks for your question, Lindsay. Hootsuite and Buffer, along with a few other apps, allow you to connect multiple social media accounts to them for ease of maintenance. For example, I have my Buffer account set up that it can post to the Busy Marketer's Facebook page, Google Plus page, and my personal Twitter account and LinkedIn account. Each one of those has its own schedule that I derived based on the activity of my followers on each platform. I add posts to my Buffer queue and it automatically posts on my behalf at the times I defined in the schedules. A shotgun approach, in this case, would be taking the lazy way out and writing a post for Twitter and putting it in Buffer, selecting all of my social media accounts that I mentioned, and just clicking or tapping the Buffer button. What that would do is send out all the exact same message to each one of my accounts. A shotgun blast that sends the same message in the same format everywhere. The problem with that approach, and yes, I'm guilty of doing it from time to time, is you're talking to everyone as if they're on Twitter. So what do my followers see? Well, my Twitter followers see a nicely formatted tweet that is 140 characters or less with hashtags, a link, a picture, you know, all the usual stuff. But guess what? LinkedIn doesn't use hashtags. And if you just use the title of the article in your link, your LinkedIn followers will see the exact same thing at the bottom along with an excerpt under your post. You need to keep them in mind because your post for LinkedIn should be a comment on the article for the audience rather than just the title of it, which they're going to see anyway. It's a similar case for Facebook. And speaking of Facebook, they don't like you to use third-party apps at all. If you have a special post that you really want your fans to see organically without having to pay to promote it, you need to go and schedule it directly in Facebook. Like I said in my chat with Emily, I like Twitter. If I see a post from someone with a fb.me link at the end that's truncated because it was formatted for Facebook without Twitter's 140 character limit in mind, I get irritated. If I continue to see it, you get unfollowed. So there it is. Use Buffer and Hootsuite to easily schedule your posts in one place. Hootsuite also offers the ability to react and interact with followers and fans too, but you know, don't use it as a one size or in this case, a one post fits all approach. And remember to be a person, not just someone blasting out links all the time. Think of social media as a telephone or a two-way conversation rather than a megaphone for you to stand on a podium and shout your message at people. Lindsay, I hope that answers your question. I'll put links to both of these apps in the show notes. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, head over to thebusymarketer.com/ask to leave a question. Man, time really does fly when you're having fun, and I am having so much fun. Like everything, all good things come to an end, and that is going to end this episode of the Busy Marketer Podcast. Head on over to my website for show notes and links to everything we've discussed today, including Blake's contact info. Go to thebusymarketer.com/Blake. If you like what you heard today, I would appreciate you leaving a rating and review in iTunes. We need this podcast to show up high in the new and noteworthy section of iTunes so that we can be discovered. And here's what you need to do to get it there. Leave a 5-star rating with a written review. Search iTunes for The Busy Marketer and the show will come right up. Next, spread the word. The more downloads we get, the higher the ranking. So go to thebusymarketer.com/love and that will create a post that you can share on Twitter to help get the word out. Be sure to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/thebusymarketer, and follow me on Twitter at BJ Smith Strategy. Thank you all for the love and support. Until next time, remember to focus on the important tasks and have a productive week.